Now, stay tuned for the second hour of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Now, have you ever heard of orbital space art, Mrs. Future?
Well, maybe a little bit on this show.
That's true.
We do tend to talk about space and space art and
remember
space
earlier
artists.
This year, there was the Humanity Star.
The Humanity Star was an art project that was launched
out of New Zealand.
Yes, and it was some beautiful mirror object that was supposed to grace the night sky, and we were supposed to be able to look at it in June when it was in its brightest, and I think it came down early, so still waiting for things like that to happen.
Yeah. Well, the latest project along these lines is simply known as the Orbital Reflector, and it's a reflective inflatable sculpture. It's stuffed into this little tiny satellite that you can buy for like $50,000 to get up there, a CubeSat. Mm-hmm. And then ejects it out of the CubeSat like a Mylar balloon goes out, and it orbits the Earth for several weeks before disintegrating on reentry into the atmosphere. But in those few weeks,
so it's
when it's
up, big shiny balloon,
yes. Mm-hmm. And the artist for the Orbital Reflector says, quote, "This encourages all of us to look up at the night sky with a renewed sense of wonder and consider our place in the universe and to reimagine how we live together on this planet."
Oh, well.
Very idealistic.
Yeah.
I'm seeing glitter in the sky. Mm-hmm. However, if you realize that we created that glitter as an art, then maybe we'll have more meaning for us.
That's what the artist hopes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And that's one side. The other side is that maybe it's just
space junk.
Yeah. Showboating stunt of some sort. But should we allow this stuff? We have some perspectives on this. First, we have Kit Galloway, who's been very concerned about this. Kit has a background in media, one of the pioneers of digital media, as we understand
it. Yes, yes. Kit is really maybe an unsung hero in the art world because Kit and Sherry started the Electronic Cafe
in Santa Monica,
which is, of course, how we happen to be aware of them. But even before that, in the 80s, they were producing some amazing art that was very prescient. It was anticipating the internet. It was anticipating Skype.
The Hole in Space Project.
Yes, we're talking about the Hole in Space Project.
Get some live TV feeds between New York and L.A., in giant windows so people could just wave to each other and talk to each other. Amazing. 1980, it was fascinating origins of space art, you might say. Yeah. So welcome, Kit. I believe you're on the line.
Oh, wait.
Oh, whoa. Whoa. What happened? Yeah, I guess he was there.
what an entrance.
Oh, I'm in the future. Hi, guys. Hi, son.
Hi, Kit. Hey, you Kit. Are in the future. It took you a while to get here, man. We've been waiting.
Yeah, well, I almost overshot it, and you don't want to overshoot to go past the future because it's a long swim back, and you have to have lots of snacks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes, and it's you're coming in really hot here. You must be have a good connection.
You know, honey, I think your headphones are turned up very loud.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
How am I doing? Me.
Yeah, it's not you, honey. It's him.
Yeah, baby. I don't know. Any event.
Well, it's hot here.
Oh, yeah. You were down in the desert, right?
Yeah, the high desert out here where Atomic Avionics developed their weapons-grade droids and stuff like that. And it's pretty wild. You go to the post office out here, and people have antennas sticking out of their heads and weird stuff.
Yes, you must feel right at home. Well, Kit, what do you think of the space art? It seems like a natural canvas. We've got this large canopy of stars that we don't play with too much yet. Do you think artists should have a chance to play as much as scientists?
Well, you know, humans go to the beach and they start making sand and writing their names in it and stuff like that. Or we pee in the ocean, you know, it doesn't matter, supposedly, and, you know, stuff like that. And then you look around a few decades later and you say, oh, Right. So anyway, I have a little statement here. I kind of think about this is a conflict between informing the uninformed and the pathology of celebrity.
Yeah.
Which I think the art world invented, actually, many years ago when it broke away from the Catholic Church. But military and scientists, people, they don't ask for permission to put stuff up there.
No, never have.
Yeah. So should this be the standard for everyone?
That you need permission to put something in space?
Well, now that Earth orbit delivery services have become commercialized, you know, anyone with a few thousand bucks can turn the nighttime sky into an ad space. So our celestial canopy for lovers and poets, that should start beginning to be recognized and cherished starting tomorrow as a natural preserve for all the people of the world.
I mean, like a national park, you know, where the sky is a national park and we shouldn't muck with it.
You mean like Space Rushmore?
No, well, he's talking about not mucking with it at all.
I know. I'm being ironic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You are silly.
Silly. Yes, well.
That's why you're
ironic
here.
Is silly?
I am silly. I'm very fond of silliness. That's true.
Well, I wouldn't want to see a giant Pepsi commercial in the sky, if that's what you mean. I can see that. It could be taken out to an extreme. But right now, the best space art is maybe like a little glitter. I mean, it hardly even compares to a $10 firecracker.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Right? Yeah, so.
You want to hear this?
Yeah.
We're setting a precedent.
Okay.
A precedent that we shouldn't be doing. And so we need to start getting ahead of stuff instead of stumbling into the future. So the present, the sky, this precious thing, is being neglected, allowing for self-promoting buttheads to turn it into their own art gallery or whatever that the people of the earth won't be able to walk away from. So is this a good thing?
Just don't look at the sky. Just don't look at the sky. You'll be fine.
Well, the thing
I live in the high desert. I love the sky. I watch the sky.
I'm teasing you.
Oh. Okay, before a tease starts, go like this.
Yeah.
I see.
So you'll kill it in. Okay.
Okay. So you are basically sounding the alarm that we don't want to lose the beauty of the night sky to every artistic yahoo who wants to send up a new artificial humdinger, a star or a sign or some kind of light show. You want to.
Or a phallic symbol. Yeah.
Uh huh. And so you want to prevent the sky from spam. And spammers, and that's why you're sounding the alarm?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want billboards. I agree with you there. You don't want to use the sky in some schlock way like that.
All right.
Well,
listen, we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break, okay?
Well, can you hold on, Kit? We'll bring you on for another segment or so.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
We'll be back. Stay tuned. Kit Galloway is our guest on the Dr. Future Show.
Yeah, look, Don Davis just checked in.
Hey.
All right, he's a space artist. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about orbital space art and its impact on us and our environment and whether or not we should even allow it to exist. We've got people on the line here, including a space artist we'll bring on shortly, but we're just talking to Kit Galloway, who has more of a negative perspective on whether or not orbital space art should exist. Yes, Kit, what about you? And any further statements on orbital space art stuff? Do you really?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me fix up my resume here a little bit for you. In 75, Sherry and I met and Felix Guattari, a friend, introduced us. And we got wind that NASA wanted some cultural demonstrations. So we hopped on a Russian-Soviet ocean liner back then.
Yeah.
And we hooked up with NASA and went to NASA Ames Research Center, and we used a broadcast satellite, and we actually did the first approximations of long-distance immersive virtual reality with facial recognition in those days, which...
That's considerably ahead of its time. Sure. Okay, so...
Yeah, it was 10 years...
So you were involved with the early satellite space stuff before, so in terms of art, that was cool. Nothing wrong with that.
I'm not against space art. I just don't think we know what it is yet until we start becoming indigenous to.
We should really define it more, maybe see what would be good to have and what wouldn't be good to have in orbit.
In the late 60s, I was doing my research about this stuff. and early 70s. And at UNESCO in Paris, the documentation there made it clear that the members were embroiled in this conflict about how far up a country's airspace can be. And the U.S. adopted the first-come, first-serve policy, of course, for orbital parking spots. And nations were screaming about information attack and electronic imperialism. And I think it's time to revisit that, what people can put up there. And there just needs to be some adult supervision. I don't think it's...
Or at least some intelligent thought put onto that. Okay, let's go to the lines. We got Don Davis on, I believe, who is a space artist for years with NASA.
Yeah, Don, would you please introduce yourself a little bit to the audience so that they can appreciate where you're coming from as we talk about space art?
Hello?
There you are. Okay, that's right. You're a space art animator for a long time, right?
Yes. Space artist. I'm mostly an animator these days. I've been into the space art field for 50 years now.
Okay, well then you must have some informed opinions about this new orbital space art.
Now, first of all, we're not talking about something that's going to be there for all eternity. We're talking about something with a limited lifespan. The orbital decay will make anybody who objects to it happy after a very short time. Yeah. I've done a little bit of research on the idea of space mirrors, and the idea actually goes back quite a ways. Hmm. In the 1920s, Hermann Oberth, who formulated a lot of the theoretical framework for space flight, one of the giants in that field, came up with the idea of an orbiting mirror, and that was expounded upon in the 40s and in the post-war years by Kraft Ehrlichi. He wanted to orbit a significant size flat mirror, which would have cast a beam onto a portion of the night side of Earth that would have been near sunlight in intensity. Wow. That was to be called the soleta. And he had a more modest proposal for a mirror that would have made it more like full moonlight. That was the luneta.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was an idea that never went anywhere.
It seems like some of the countries that need more sunlight in the winter might appreciate some mirrored light.
Or emergency situations in regions where the power's gone out.
Yeah, daytime moment. Yeah.
Yes. 1993, the Soviets had a 65-foot diameter Mylar propeller mirror that was used to attempt to shine light on the night side. And they could see the beam on the clouds visually, but it was not bright enough to pick up from the ground significantly, except as a bright star. Actually, for quite a few years, we've had very similar objects to this, except more refined, the Iridium satellites, which have a very shiny surface on one side that the track of the reflection was cataloged at the Heavens Above site. You could look it up and see when you would see a bright star up here.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, we had Joe Jordan take us all out one night to the beach, and we were hanging out, and he said 10 minutes before we had to go, "Hey, everybody, we've got to get out to the beach." And once we got out there, within 30 seconds, we saw a iridium flare.
A little glitter in the sky.
Yeah,
it was fun to go and look at something like that. And this is a good deal brighter than this satellite inflatable stretched octahedron is going to be. I don't see any reason for concern about this particular item. I think it's cool. Again, we're talking about a temporary thing.
Right.
And if anything, I would suggest that or in a future thing, the sides be colored so that we'd get multicolored reflections and such. But, you know, we're talking the first magnitude star at the brightest. It's not a big deal, and it's only going to be a brief thing. Maybe you'd see it very faintly like we see many satellites, but many satellites have flares also, as they have shiny areas that present the reflection of the sun to us. Hmm. I have no misgivings.
So this is within realms, yeah. So this is fine. But do you think there should be limits on how schlocky these performances might become?
Or actually, what process should there be for quality control? I think that's Kit's concern.
Yeah. Do you want it to be like Las Vegas? Or is it a form of high art?
I'm not concerned about Las Vegas appearing in our skies. May I mention a few other art projects that have been thought about over the years briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I've seen from time to time over the years some schemes, things that would be widely visible, but actually in some cases a lot less substantial than the hardware we're talking about. Mm. There was an experiment in the 1962 through 67 period in creating artificial meteors where charges basically were set off from a rocket launched from Wallops Island, Virginia, and they were basically shooting a gun down into the atmosphere from space. And so these were photographed. there's a Japanese company, apparently, ALE company, that is planning on a artificial meteor shower over Japan next year.
Sort of a high form of fireworks.
We're not talking about space junk. It's talking about stuff that enters the atmosphere and has a blaze of glory for people
right.
that are selected.
This is sort of like instead of a drone show over the next over
space,
the next crowd, we're going to do a meteor show.
Can I make a point?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Kit.
We trivialize this idea that it's just going to burn up in our already troubled atmosphere. A lot of stuff's going to go up there with these microsats and all these launches and more launches. And you need to look and think about something called the Kessler syndrome, which is about collisions up there. When we were working with the NASA satellite in 77, when we would go in, it had a problem positioning jet. It would go on and it would lose its position. We had to reel it back in. So if we get a whole bunch of stuff flying up there at 15,000 miles an hour and stuff like that, the point is that burning up in the atmosphere and actually doing light shows intentionally is kind of irresponsible.
But why is that exactly? Because it's polluting the atmosphere?
Well, what do you think? It's carbon footprints up there. Things are raining in, and stuff is raining in all the time.
We have hundreds of tons of stuff, of meteorites, falling into the Earth every day.
Yeah,
so,
I think it's a matter of scale. When you think about how hard would it be to put together an art project, say, even on the ocean, that could be seen briefly by people somewhere, and then just magnify that by an order of magnitude. We're talking about space here. We're talking about things that take a lot of effort to make something really tiny happen.
I think if you want to ban CubeSats, that's fine. You know, you work on strengthening the regulations. If you want to do that and make any art project impossible, sure, I guess you're within your rights to try to do that. But something that only has a limited lifetime, it's going to enter the atmosphere like so much space hardware already does. I don't see any harm in something that would be inspirational or something that could be a shared vision, however brief. In this last attempt at this,
hardly anybody saw it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's artiness that is too presumptuous about enlightening humanity by putting their stuff up there, and they have their names associated with it.
Always artist ego, but it does give you a palette that encompasses the entire species, and that's something that even media can't deliver.
And to make people aware of the night sky more, even if it's the dangers to the night sky, like light pollution and that sort of thing, the inspiration throughout human history the night sky has given us is something so valuable and so important that anything that helps to appreciate that, I think, is only to the good of mankind.
Well, I have posted a lot of things on my Facebook page by astronomers who are complaining about it. Ralph Abraham put a like on what I put up there. I think we're not getting all the thinking that we need in sort of like the Mondo 2000 yippee kind of thing.
Do they complain about the Iridium satellites?
Well, there's going to be too much traffic up there by the whole thing going commercial. Now, all it takes is one sort of component failure to send one of these things hurling out of its restricted orbit, which is being monitored by the NSA, and to collide into another one, which is going to set off like a popcorn thing.
That's the Kessler syndrome you're talking about, like we saw in the movie Gravity. Right.
Well,
right. It's not science fiction. I'm just saying that this sort of just letting anybody go up there and put their stuff up there just needs a little bit of adult supervision. And everybody that is sort of like for this is like some sort of 70s disco.
All right. Any comments on this, folks? 831-479-1080. We have Kit Galloway and Don Davis online. You guys, can you hold on for another segment?
Sure.
All right. Thanks. We'll be right back. This is the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
This is the Dr. Future Show, and we have our guests today, Kit Galloway and Don Davis, who are renowned artists in our experience and who are here to talk today about the future of space art.
Yeah, I'd like to see some common ground here. I'd like to see where we can do something really cool with this new palette, if you will, and at the same time not be harmful to the environment.
I had a thought or two about a couple of fanciful space projects that I wanted to briefly mention, if I could.
Sure, absolutely, Don. I remember you were mentioning something about being able to cast a large shadow onto the planet.
Yes, both of these involve light. Now, I don't know if I'm the first to think of this, but at least independently I did. But the idea I had was, see, one of the things that we were thinking about is large space structures in the shuttle era when it was in its more optimistic days and building gigantic things like parasols or truss structures out of next to nothing that could be kilometers in length. If a disk, say, 20 kilometers in diameter, or better still, an oval that would be 15 by 30 or something like that, could be orbited, say, 500 kilometers up and oriented parallel to the ground below it, it would generate artificial total eclipses of the sun that could be driven to, even only for a few seconds, mind you, but still, what a wonderful, astonishing sight it would be to be inside of a shadow of an artificial, flimsiest of structures. It would probably only last for weeks before crumpling and falling, but that's something that it would be the opposite, actually, of a mirror reflecting light into the ground.
You're reflecting shadow onto the Earth? Would you actually see an image of the sun in totality?
Well, I think what you're doing is creating a camera hole, right? You're creating a pinhole for the light to come through.
No, the opposite of a pinhole, a occulting disk that you would see the sun disappear behind it, and then you'd see the corona and such just for a few moments.
Really? You'd be able to see the corona?
Yes, while the light, depending upon how big the shadow is, the darker the sky would be. The other idea I've seen, which I saw online in the 90s, which kind of struck my imagination, but it seemed foolishly impossible then, was the idea of painting the moon, the night side of the moon, with light. And the idea was to have a bunch of lasers coordinated, aimed at the shaded side, the night side of a crescent or up to a half moon, and coordinating them so that off and on, they would all come on and off at the same time. And in theory, you might be able to see a pulsation of light. Now, back then, it was absolutely impossible. There's no way you're going to get millions of people to aim something precisely. But when I went to Burning Man and saw a 5-watt laser burn a path of light from one horizon to the other, I realized that that kind of hardware might be getting plentiful enough, so if you had hundreds of them aimed precisely at the night side of the moon, obviously there are enormous coordination and even safety issues with this, but just thinking in theory.
You'd have to own Google or something.
It would be just an amazing thing that would just, a flickering light up and down, it would just be an insubstantial thing, it wouldn't leave any kind of a trace. But anyway, the idea of a reflecting satellite, we have already lots of satellites, and it's not the end of the world that they're reflecting things.
Can I get in here?
Your turn. Go ahead, Kit. Thank you, Don.
Yeah, I think it has merit. Go ahead, Kit. You have a...
the counterpoint.
Yeah,
Debbie Downer point of view?
I have a better view. And authentic space art is the opportunity to create a new context and a new role for art rather than doing the same old shtick, medieval type,
Right, with just reflections.
There'll be periods where we just move our same repertoire and we reflect ourselves onto space. We need to get to space to figure out what the intrinsic qualities of space art might be so that it can reflect and acculturate us rather than projecting ourselves onto it. And the stuff that this guy's talking about and other people is just absolutely juvenile and irresponsible. It's things up there.
What would be not juvenile? What would be a responsible artistic project in your estimation?
Are we clear on this?
Well, I mean, it's one thing to be a critic, but it's another to come up with something better than what you're criticizing.
Yeah, because really what we're talking about is how do we have artistic freedom with human responsibility. You're advocating that we do things that are in a new frontier of art with nature. You're saying that all art that we've done before is medieval, and it's just big egos projecting themselves on Earth and not understanding what they're doing, and that we should stop doing that and do something different. So what different would you say?
Yeah, we have to be informed by occupying that space, not just taking nose dives into the vomit comet. That's as close as artists have got to space. Do you see what I mean?
We need That's not quite true. A number of artistic works have been exhibited in the space aboard spacecraft, and we're talking about your so-called medieval paintings.
Okay, let's talking stick here. Yeah, okay. Let Don finish and then respond.
I'm not talking about sending paintings and art and pictures and graphics or even on the Voyager disc or that kind of stuff. That is just archaic.
Okay, speaking of archaic art, I mean, there's a lot of great art that has been done with traditional media. And in 1986, Andrei Sokolov, the great Soviet space artist, he had the first painting exhibited or shown in space, as far as I know, and it was the glowing, radiant study of the Mir space station in space. And then we had earlier a fallen astronaut figurine that was carried aboard the Apollo 15 mission and left on the moon next to a commemorative plaque of people called cosmonauts and astronauts that had passed away in the way up to the moon. And, you know, then 1993, a sculpture of an abstract nature was carried aboard Mir called the Cosmic Dancer sculpture. So there have been forays of more traditional art in this, but the size, the scale of space invites daring ideas. And again, anything I've been talking about so far is so ephemeral and brief and really harmless compared to the context of everything else that's going on there that I really don't see it as a problem.
Yeah, it's like playing with our atmosphere a little bit. And,
yeah, obviously. But, you know, sending up sculptures and paintings, I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is just exporting. This is not creating something intrinsic to the space.
I'm very curious. You're very negative about the things that you're hearing, but you're not really expressing something new. That
How about maybe an artist on the ISS?
Let me try it again. What I'm saying is that we have to occupy that space to find its intrinsic qualities. We don't really know what space art is. We are just shipping, exporting stuff up that is just Earth-based, gravity-based, ground-based, that we have to acculturate that space is what I'm saying.
It is what it is, the current time and space.
Hey, folks, we have another caller. Why don't we let Ed Imprundell chime in here and see what he can add to the conversation, okay? You ready?
You bet.
Okay. All right. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. The reason I called in was I was a proposal manager for bidding with a place called Rocket Plane Kistler when NASA put out the contract for the replacement shuttle to space. And so I know a fair amount about gaining access to space and why it's going to open up and what the people have been talking about figuring out new and effective uses of it. You got to be able to get the space cheaply enough so you can do that. And that's the contract I work.
Okay, so you're saying, I think this is Kit's concern, is that once it's commercial, it just becomes something where anybody who's willing to put down, to ante up, can just put any old thing up there, and we're going to run into this human tragedy of like the billboards that line every mark of freeway, and then we don't see nature anymore. Right? I think that's basically kind of the idea, and that we need a different kind of art. We need a different kind of human expression.
Something that
Thank you.
Something that exalts the human spirit, right?
Yeah, well, let me come in at a different angle. When the United States, when we put in the first railroad from coast to coast, the human spirit was able to express itself because it could commercially sell its product. It could get beef to market. It could get farm product to market. It could travel. And so the space shuttle, the commercial SpaceX, and the other one that's working on cheap launch to space is going to be like the railroad trains work to the continental United States. It's going to open it up, and then the nature of individuals to leverage off of it and flourish up there, that will occur.
Mm-hmm. And just naturally, right? It'll be out of it. I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's kind of like the asteroid miners will lead the charge in this case, in that sense. That's where the commercial elements
where people go, and the people will be inspired. And right now, most of the people, almost everybody's on Earth, and that's where the inspiration is of what's going on in space and related ideas. So I would also say that as time goes on and the human presence in space is increased, that's going to imply that more and more large space structures are going to be erected, and including things like satellite solar power stations, space colonies, and such. So as time goes on, we're likely to see more and more things, artificial stars, if you will, in space than in the past. And again, I guess the Iridium satellites, they were a joy to make an effort to go see. And they're going away now because of the new satellite design doesn't have the reflective, shiny surfaces. That was an ephemeral thing that came and went.
Yeah,
and
but I think needs that, some new art.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of like something that can be appreciated as an extraordinary site to share with people.
Don, you do give me an idea there. It seems like that maybe there should be a small percentage of the budget for designing of satellites to go into its artistic merit in the sky. To maybe wherever atmosphere or wherever their orbit it's going in, it might be able to be useful. It might have a glint on.
If we were talking about accumulative things that would last forever and accumulate, then I would have reservations about that as well. But we're talking about like a sand sculpture or something like that that gets washed away after a while. And human beings have molded things into unnatural shapes.
There's more to say about this. We've got to go to another break.
We'll do our final comment. We're going to look at the future of space art in the final segment. Okay, guys?
We'll be back. Dr. Future Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We just got a comment in from Richard who says, how about a red Tesla Roadster with a Starman in the driver's seat with a toy roaster on the dashboard? Is that art?
Yeah. Is that art? Now, see, that's where I wanted to take this question before I bring everybody else back on, is what are we talking about? Art is always so many things. It's like love. It's something different to every person. And for some people, it's a big waste of time. For some people, it's the apex of evolution and civilization. And what we're talking about here is a new place, a new frontier for humanity. And so I just want to summarize that this conversation we've been having is where people feel so strongly about art and what is art, and they're all coming from a place of wanting it to be good art.
So how do you do that? How do you make sure it's good art?
And
I guess that could be a question for our...
And in summary, the arguments are, A, we have to ban junk art. B, we have to appreciate the human spirit that is generating the art of space as we go there and do things that have never been done before. And three, we have to make the getting to space possible and then look at how humanity can creatively express itself as art in that unfoldment.
And that comes down to CubeSat art, the cheapest form of getting into space right now. Who's going to comment first, huh?
That was Ed.
Ed? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm come from this side of the thing about unleashing the spirit of the people, that it will occur. So from an artistic standpoint and from a systems engineer standpoint, you can see right now on Earth that large structures like buildings are being used as for painting upon, the tapestry that's painted on.
Mm-hmm.
So you got banners or material that's put on the buildings, and it's very pretty to many people. Now, I could see someone using the moon as a landscape and coloring it or putting a figure on it that can be seen by Earth, like, say, maybe Mickey Mouse on the moon.
Yeah, just...
Maybe Disneyland.
To people like Kit, that sounds like a tragedy. That sounds like the wrong direction.
Spelled out Pepsi, maybe. You know.
A coherent image like that on the moon is highly unlikely. The people did used to advertise on clouds, by the way. They would put, back in the early part of the last century, image ads were actually projected on clouds of all places. But as we see buildings decorated with light sculpture, with dynamic light things that fit the architecture, and wonderful things are being done with that. But I was just talking about the night side of the moon facing the Earth being briefly illuminated. And I don't know whether it's practical. I don't know if we have enough laser power in the world to do that.
Good to think about.
Yeah, Don, I can't wait until you, with all of your incredible ability to scientifically calculate the science behind it, to come up with the number of how many lasers we need to point at the moon to make it happen.
Well, I can guess now. I mean, I'm more of an artist. I'm an intuitive guy rather than a numbers guy. But if you were on the moon with a telescope, you'd see a 5-watt laser aimed at the moon easily. Whether it would contribute significant illumination to the night side of the moon, you know, that's open to question. But we already, of course, bounce laser signals off of the moon onto specially designed reflectors that were been left by manned and unmanned missions. We've been able to keep track of the moon's distance from the Earth and such things from that. That whole thing, it's a beam of light. It's nothing that's going to affect anything. It would just be a brief flicker that it would be, oh, well, we did that.
Moderator.
Yes, yeah, go ahead, Kit.
Yeah, while we're still on here, I wanted to acknowledge you, sweet people, for acknowledging Sherry's passing away a few years ago on your radio show. I really appreciated that moment.
Yeah, and we miss her.
Yeah, she was quite a light. She was really a very big part of our early days at the Electronic Cafe. You remember her?
The Electronic Cafe was actually born in the Orwellian year of 84. Since my role here is being the angry old man yelling at a cloud.
You're doing it well.
Yeah, I came up with a couple of really bad ideas. One, I think there should be, you're talking about distributing money from government projects to put more art in space. I was thinking, and this is about the bad art, I was thinking that there needs to be a foundation that actually pays artists not to do dumb stuff. That's one idea.
Interesting, because, you know, I had a sort of reciprocal idea, because I was so bothered by bad advertising, and I'm so bothered by how much of our media is just really wasting our time and sucking our time away from us, because people are basically paying money to interrupt what we're interested in with what they want us to pay attention to. And it's the same thing. Why can't there be an art board that screens how people waste other people's time?
What we're going to get is government legislation to regulate this, because artists won't take it. My other plan is space art, space wars, where other artists who don't like other people's stuff in space set up satellites that hunt down. They're like bad space art killers. Satellites.
Active. Ludicrous.
Instead of space wars, we have art wars.
Vigilante art wars.
I had a thought to share.
Go ahead, John. Hold on, Kit. Let's hear from Don for a sec. Go ahead.
When SpaceX launched from Vandenberg, that spacecraft in the twilight, in the evening twilight, that plume, that was a magnificent sight that enthralled, you know, millions of people here in theory could have seen that. And it was an unintended display, but it was a fantastic thing. And then one orbit later, the escape rocket fired, and I happened to see that over here in Palm Springs, arching over the sky, making this fan of light that passed over the trees and beyond the horizon.
Wow.
And then things like that, if people are alerted to these in advance, it's just a wonderful shared experience. And see, I don't come at this from anger or what derision. I come at this from inspiration and wonder and the desire to share the beauty of what's out there and what we're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
Yeah, but
that's
I hear a lot of constraints.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm hearing, though, is you want to inspire people, but you want to constrain them. I'd rather go back to the world where we had patrons, and you had to go to the patron, whether it was music in the 1600s or paintings, and then before that, you go to the patron, and if you can come up with a good enough, grand enough concept, the patron will fund it. And instead of sitting down and trying to block people and saying what you know, like you don't like Mickey Mouse, but that's not a good idea. But
I agree, Ed. I was just having fun.
We have another way of making decisions on this, too. We have another article we didn't delve into this week. It was about blockchain decentralized democracy. So something like that could be used for voting on what art projects really should be put into the sky. Since we have to look at them, we should be able to have a say on them.
Oh, boy. This gets very complicated, because we're trying to manage individual self-expression and freedom with some kind of committee process.
Well, that's where the decentralized blockchain comes in.
Again, if we're talking about building a cement sculpture on the beach out of the sand that would stay there forever, I could see the same kind of objection, but a sand sculpture that gets washed away and it makes its moment of glory and is photographed and then is only a memory or an image afterwards, that's what a lot of the space art we're talking about is. And I think that it's something that would get people to go, look at that. Isn't that amazing?
I love your little thing. I love the way you think about it. We have to go to another caller, Don. Okay. All right, we're going to say hi to Downtown Al in Santa Cruz. Hi, Downtown Al. Did you want to chime in on space art?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to give a little bit of support to the angry man shouting out the clouds, Kim. you know,
Kit,
well, the fact that we do need to kind of understand the environment before we go into it and make these changes. If you spend any time in Yosemite Valley, you know that the terminal moraine has been dynamited. They used to dredge Muir Lake. And if you hike up behind some of the falls, there's little diversion dams to keep them flowing in a more beautiful manner.
Mm. You know, when we were at Niagara Falls, they have the original electricity plant still there on the side of the canal.
Thank you, Tesla.
Anyway.
And you probably also know that most of the flow in Niagara Falls is diverted through the hydroelectric plant.
Yeah, something like 60% of it.
Yeah.
We and shut the falls down on the American side at
if
one
we
point.
Didn't do that, the erosion would be even crazier, that it's moved already 11 miles just in the last 200 years since we've been measuring it. So if we weren't slowing it down, it'd be moving faster.
I'm not advocating for no human interference, but it does seem that, you know, we've kind of advanced to where maybe we have an appreciation of geologic changes or the environment or whatever else is going on, and that has its own beauty.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not shooting either guy down, but I definitely think it should be thought about, and it should be thought about in the perspective of this natural phenomenon that's out there.
And I would support using ephemeral things that don't last very long to make an artistic expression, just like they put light shows onto the pyramids in Egypt. They're not marking up the pyramids. It's just something that comes and goes and is a shared experience. So,
I love that, Don. Great expression.
And, you know, I understand and appreciate that, but I think there also needs to be an understanding. And like you said, once we became residents of space, we might have understanding that we just can't have when we're here on the Earth. So,
right.
So you got to keep the angry guys in there.
Yeah, well, thank you, Kit. I'm glad you're
all right, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Caller, appreciate
that was a
the
fun
input
show.
There. Yes, thank you. And I think Don's advice about just looking up now, seeing what's actually happening out there is really exciting. And there's a lot of natural art unfolding before our eyes. And thank you, Kit. Thank you, Don, for being on the show today.
Yeah, and our guests, and that was a fun one. All right, if you need to follow up on this conversation, call, always reach us at future@ksco.com. And that's it. Bye, Kit Galloway. Bye, Don Davis. Thanks for your great thoughts on the future of art and space.
Yeah, and we'll see you all next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. And this is KSEO Santa Cruz.